Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
Good times. Distant times. Antique times.
What antiques are we talking about this week?
Well, I was wondering if you wanted to talk about very vague antiques, which is to say the concept of smalls.
Smalls, a concept which puzzled me upon my first entry into the antiques industry.
Yeah, that's definitely one of those things that I take for granted that, like, not everyone knows about.
Yeah, it was a very confusing first month, 6 months, year in the antique shop, trying to figure out what everyone meant when they asked about the smalls.
Is it Biggie? Do they want to know about Biggie Smalls?
Yes.
Yeah, unbeknownst to most people, we here in the antiques industry are obsessed with the truth behind what happened to Biggie Smalls. No, it's actually... It's a term that mostly refers to low-ticket items, usually, not always, but usually anything that is kind of like trinket, palm-sized.
An item that is both physically small and low in price.
Yeah, that's more of a Venn diagram because it's not always both. You know, sometimes you get like a big old soup tureen that is like technically a small. It's the difference between like a complete set of dishware and like a cup, you know? Like, I wouldn't consider a set of dishware a small exactly, even though it's made up of small parts.
But a singular item on its own that you could probably carry with your own two hands.
There you go. I think that's a good way to put it. Because I feel like when you say small, people like picture like Wade figurines.
Should they not?
No, because sometimes it's bigger. Like, I don't know, like a lot of lamps qualify as smalls and they're not physically, you know, you could carry them in two hands, but they're bigger than that.
See, I was unaware that lamps qualified as smalls.
It depends on the lamp. Don't take this as like pure fact. This might be like a person to person thing. I consider it like small ticket for me specifically.
So for you, the low price is more important than the size of the item.
Yeah, it's like the low price, the you know, lack of prestige to it, that kind of thing. You know, it's not anything super special. It's just nice. So small. Because, you know, I would, like, personally, I would classify, like, end tables. My definition of small goes pretty far before I have to abandon the concept.
Okay, because, like, my other definition of smalls was just anything except the furniture. But you are also including furniture. So now I think I understand why I was so confused for so long.
I think you are getting it. Well, but you think I am calling, you know, small furniture, but you're right. That actually does unnecessarily complicate matters. It's like small beer, you know?
It's just an eensy weensy credenza.
You know, like a side table, like a demi-lune, little plant.
Little planter?
Planter. Why don't we just say planter? Little plant table or planter or something like that.
A jardiniere?
You know... I'm going to try to continually define my definition of smalls, and right now it's anything that doesn't make you wish that you were dead instead of carrying it up the stairs.
Okay.
So like if you conceptualize carrying it upstairs and you don't go like, oh god, I'd really rather lie down and die. That's a small. I like it. It's like a practical little thought experiment.
This feels very broad.
It's extremely, this is just like the modern philosophy. Some people give you the allegory of the cave, I give you the allegory of the stairs. Full stop, I have no idea what the allegory of the cave is, and I don't plan on finding out.
It's fine, just watch The Good Place, I'm sure it's explained at some point.
Philosophy is boring. There, I said it.
So the thing about smalls is that most of the antiques industry seems to run on them.
However much nobody wants to admit that, yeah.
They are the things that move through the shop quickly while the big ticket items wait on shelves for months or years to be sold.
Yeah, because the big ticket items, and it becomes more true the bigger the ticket and the piece gets, they're really waiting for like a very special adopter.
Someone who wants it badly enough to fork over a lot of cash and also lug it out of the store.
Yeah, like a lot of stars have to align for these things to go. You have to want it to be forking over like these high like price tags. You have to want it a lot to be forking over the sheer, like, logistical nightmare that is getting some pieces from one place to another. You're really playing, like, pound puppies waiting for the perfect person to come along and take it home. And yet they come to symbolize, I think, the identity of a lot of, like, shops and dealers. Despite the fact that when you break it down that way, they sound less than useless. It's a charity at that point that you're keeping them there.
The big ticket items, you mean?
Yeah, like you're running a wayward home for fucking huge credenzas. And because, man, you are most likely literally paying rent around that motherfucking thing, waiting for someone to love it enough to take it away from you. But, you know, you try saying that to someone. I think I don't say this to people because it would make me incredibly unpopular. But I think you'd get a lot of pushback if you were just like, you realize that you are, like, pretty much running a foster home for these things, right? Because, like, I don't know, when you talk to someone about, like, what is it you sell, they're not gonna say, like, oh, roughly 600 tiny crackle vases. That's not really, like, the first thing out of their mouth.
They're gonna say they sell furniture.
Yeah, like, baskets and baskets of Wade figurines, actually. It's like, no, I sell, like, mid-century colonial-style furniture, like, and I made that up. I just started smashing concepts together just then.
It's going to take Martha Stewart by the storm.
Martha Stewart just woke up out of a fucking dead sleep somewhere. I don't know why I assume she's in a different timeline.
I mean, she behaves like it.
She really does. She really does act like she's in orbit somewhere we can't access. But yeah, it's like I said, people tend to define themselves by their big ticket items. And like, I'm not like above them. I do too. When people ask, like, well, what are you really into? And like, well, actually, antique books right now. Like, I don't tell them that I've got like 96 Psalm Bibles in German. Like, I tell them that I have a copy of Tannhauser.
Ah.
You know?
Yes.
It's emblematic of what I care about, but it's not the bread and butter of like what I make.
True.
I don't know. Do you think that's bad? Now, the way I'm saying it now, it's like it's creeping into my subconscious that might be bad.
I don't think it's bad. I think it's entirely reasonable to define yourself by the thing you're passionate about rather than the thing that pays the bills.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Oh, they tend to be more useful, right?
Oh, see, I was going to take the opposite tack. I think the smalls are by and large useless knickknacks, whereas the big furniture pieces can actually serve a purpose in your house and home.
Okay, all right. So let's run with that. Why do you think that they outperform in like pretty much every single way?
I think they outperform financially because they're less of a financial commitment on the part of the purchaser. They're easier to impulse buy.
Impulse buy.
Which means that more people are going to pick them up. Like, if you have one customer buying a $500 piece versus 500 customers buying a $5 piece apiece, like, you're gonna make more money off the many, many, many more small individual sales than you will off the one big ticket sale.
See, that's actually something when I was a little babby, I got first started, my boss had a saying, and I live by that, was just that, like, you have two choices. You have two fast nickels or one slow dime.
Damn.
And, like, that was always just, like, you can run this however you want, but, like, it's always going to boil down to, like, you're gonna make less money faster or the same amount slow, like, and like, I live by that, man. I live by that.
Do you?
Like, theoretically, I mean, no, because I have a 9-to-5. It's like, don't actually live by that.
I think you might live by that in so much as through our Etsy shop.
Yeah, like,
smalls also kind of lead the way in online sales because not only are they smaller and cheaper, but they're also way easier to ship.
Yeah, exactly. Precisely. It's just, I think it's really influenced my thinking in regards to, like, my interest in being a dealer is because my focus kind of has always been on, like, the big pieces will come if they come, but, like, it's more important to focus on, like, low investment, like, things that have, like, an immediate appeal.
Yeah.
For me, like, I think a lot of people, their careers are around, like, getting those big gets all the time, and for me, it's really incidental. If I see it, it happens, and that's great. But for the most part, I am just trying to find, like, an unusual plate. Because I know someone's gonna need a plate, and if it looks pretty, there you go. Someone's bought my pretty plate. And that's really, like, my entire... I'm not entirely exaggerating. I have said that phrase to many people in many different walks of life for many different reasons. it does actually become, like, a really good catch-all life advice.
One slow nickel or two quick dimes?
No, that one's a no-brainer, Ken. I don't think anyone takes a slow nickel over fast dimes.
Oh, wait. Wait a second. Woo! Having a moment. Okay.
Here's the other thing. Living by that's not easy because I do that constantly. But yeah, I don't know. Even sometimes in situations where it doesn't make any sense, but if someone's like drunk and you can actually just say that to them and it'll feel really profound.
If one of your friends is having one of those drunk crises.
I think I'm pretty sure I've given it as dating advice and then reflected that it, like, that doesn't make any sense, but like,
oh, but it,
it
does,
was
though.
Absolutely a drunk crisis, so I just... It's like, listen, you can have two fast nickels or one slow dime. And like, you know,
and the
what?
Girl crying outside the bathroom is suddenly like, oh my God.
She's like, you're right. I am a slow dime. And like, you are a slow dime, sweetie. Yeah, actually, you know, it pretty much only applies to antiques. Probably like retail selling and broad, but I don't care enough about that to reflect on it.
We also don't do fraud.
Wait, what?
Not for a lack of caring about fraud, but over, like, a basic sense of human decency.
Oh, yeah, no, we are anti-fraud over here, sort of. We're coming in at a solid 98% anti-fraud.
For more on our fraud stance, check out our antiques fraud episode.
I feel like the other 2% is getting around having to buy things from Amazon.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I wasn't expecting you to say that smalls are mostly useless tchotchkes.
What were you expecting me to say?
I was just sort of hopefully anticipating for you to just say anything. Because I love to hear you speak.
Aww, I just... That's sweet.
For my corner, I actually was really thinking about smalls as utilitarian items.
Can you give me an example of a utilitarian small?
Dishes. Dishware, silverware.
So many of our antiques danger episodes are based around the fact that you should never use antiques cookware for anything other than decoration.
Listen, you and I both know that that doesn't apply to, like, most of the stuff made after the Victorian era is perfectly fine, and that's a pretty huge chart of things that are okay.
I would absolutely never use any cookware from an antique store.
Not like cookware, but, like, dishes for the most part are fine, as long as you're not, like, going at them with an electric knife, like...
I wouldn't use antique dishes.
Wow, you're not coming over to my house for dinner?
Well, I mean...
I don't own
anything.
Not
for a couple of years yet, but yeah.
Well, now you're not even invited theoretically. I contend that most dishware is perfectly safe, especially if you, you know, use it in a smart fashion.
You intelligently lead poison yourself.
It's not lead. You know that. Don't you stop that right now, mister. They stopped using lead pretty early on.
In the 70s.
Yes. Exactly.
So the stuff made before that is most antiques.
Most, like, fine china doesn't have any kind of lead glazing whatsoever. I mean, that is already stretching, I think, the definition of small, because I didn't say fine china, which is implying a level of quality, which is implying a raised price tag.
But... Yeah, which I feel like is also stretching the definition of practicality. I just don't consider fine china practical.
Fine china is incredibly practical. Ironstone in particular, like, ironstone is one of the most utilitarian things. I have absolutely no reason to believe any part of it's toxic.
Okay, when I think fine china, I think porcelain. I don't think stoneware.
Well, that sounds elitist, buddy. I think ironstone is just as fine a quality and can be just as beautiful.
Okay, but I feel like the phrase fine china has, like, an implied cultural connotation. That doesn't...
Is this just, like, a weird disconnect from me hanging around antiques too much? Is this just like, yeah, of course everyone thinks fucking ironstone's fine china. It's hard to manufacture.
I don't even know if that's an opinion shared within the antiques industry.
It absolutely... Everyone loves ironstone.
They love it, but I don't think they'd call it fine china.
That's a good point.
Write in, antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com. Is ironstone fine china? We await your vote.
Do you consider specifically, like, a high-quality, beautifully decorated ironstone to fall under the purview of the concept of fine china?
No, because it's ironstone. It's... It's not delicate. It's ironstone.
So you're saying that fine china for you has an immediate definition of delicacy implied?
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. That's totally fair.
That's fair. It's valid. It's wrong, but it's valid.
Yeah, it's valid and incorrect, but that's fine. Like,
you can be wrong. Like, that's whatever.
Yeah, you can have your dumb garbage opinion. It doesn't change the fact. I am fully expecting to, like, 100% take the L on this. Like, someone in the friends group is just going to be like, it's like 9 articles about why you're an idiot. Like,
I can't wait.
Because, like, so I feel like a part of this is sort of like almost like a prestige thing.
Okay.
Where I think people are more impressed by someone that, like, sells Victorian furniture than someone who just sells smalls. And I've certainly met people who actually will just say, like, I deal in smalls. I sell what I find, and I find what I sell. Like, I really feel like there's almost like a jump in the sort of like subconscious level of respect you give those things. Maybe? Do you think?
I do feel that there is more prestige in the bigger ticket items, generally. And I feel like that's more the public consciousness of the antiques industry, is like the big hefty furniture pieces and the like very old paintings by masters and truly exquisite full sets of 17th century China.
That is always so ironic to me, because while it's very exciting to get, like, for example, like a set of china like that, I think my second reaction is always like, dear fucking God, how am I gonna sell it now?
Yeah. It's so much at the forefront of the public perception of the antiques industry, but it's definitely not the numbers behind the antiques industry.
Here's a question I'm sort of like wondering over. Do you think it used to be, and we've come at the tail end of so much like financial like destruction, that we just won't experience it? Or do you think it's never been that way, and that's all just romanticization?
I think it's never been that way. I think the big ticket items have always been like the showpieces that get people in the door, and what they actually walk out with are the smalls.
Yeah, you know what? That sounds right.
I have no evidence to back this up. This is just my personal assumption.
That does follow a lot of what I've experienced too. But it's just that like so many people are engaged in like weird past like navel gazing about like, oh man, back in the day you used to be able to do that. And I've always wondered if that's actually true, you know?
I mean, as someone who does historical research for a living and as a hobby, it's almost never how people remember it.
And that's why I posited that question, because I knew. Just like Ken spends all of his head in the past, I think. Can I just say how hysterical it is that you actually said I do this professionally and as a hobby? It makes it sound so helpless, like you don't have a choice anymore.
I really don't.
It's like I can't get away from it. Everything I care about's intersected with this.
At a certain point, it does reach that level of saturation, where like, it's not so much a vocation or even a pastime so much as it is a way of life.
Yeah, it really is. This is actually a lifestyle. It's the best, because like sometimes if we're in like group chats or having conversations with people, and they will say something that is adjacent to historical fact, and there's actually like a fucking electricity in the air, where I'm like, Ken's about to fucking wreck this dude's whole world. Very occasionally, people will stumble into a special interest, and it will all just explode. And I'm saying that I don't think anyone's disappointed. I think for the most part, it's all very interesting. But it's very funny every time.
I have a passion for history, and I like sharing fun facts.
I love it. Like I said, I get excited because every time, even if it's something I know, I end up learning something new. It's just always
I did draw a line between historical research for profit and historical research just for the heck of it, because everything I know about witchcraft and the Puritans is making me $0.
Yeah,
the stuff
yeah.
I know about the Victorians is making me human dollars.
Yeah, yeah. One of them is for love only. But here's the thing. I love knowing it, so thank you for doing it.
Yay. So Smalls.
So Smalls. Biggie Smalls. Greatest rapper of our generation? Probably. But yeah, I don't know. It's, for me, like, I feel really, like, weirdly indignant about it, because, for me, the idea of being someone who deals in, like, even just specifically furniture is such an immediately huge investment.
Well, not only the money to acquire the furniture, but also the space you have to rent out to store the furniture while you wait for it to sell.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there are things that if, you know, if I continue being strictly online, I'm never going to be able to, like, resell.
And the extra hands you'd have to hire to help you move the furniture from place to place, and the trucks you'd have to hire to haul the furniture in.
Yeah, it turns into a very small loan of $1 million kind of situation, where it's like, you are already in a financial position to start a business, like, admit it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that rags to riches stories don't happen, but they don't happen that often.
Whereas, if you're flipping plates, for example.
That's the thing, is you can make a really slow climb out of that.
Anybody can do that.
And I don't know if this is maybe elitist on my part, but I think there is a certain kind of... This is gonna sound really, like, morally weird, I think.
Uh-huh.
For me, like, a lot of the fun out of doing smalls over anything else is that it's a lot more, like, intellect-based. Or not intellect, but, like experience-based. Because that requires being able to, like, spot valuable items that don't look especially valuable from the get. Like,
I feel like the furniture people are also equally well-versed in everything you need to know about wood and furniture styles and construction through the ages, like...
That's true. You're right. I think this is just, like... I think this is vanity. This is pure vanity. It just... It feels like there's, like, a level of, like... You definitely feel like you're, like, oh, I'm sneaking around Savers and I'm identifying the special things. Like,
you do very much feel like a Tiny Bones trinket thief.
I feel so much like Tiny... Yeah, I mean, you're right. That is strictly vanity, but here's the thing. It's great and I love the feeling. Because I just feel like big ticket items tend to have, like, an immediate visual giveaway that there's something up with this thing that makes it valuable, right? And how there is, I think the older it gets, the more immediately obvious it is to anyone, not just people with specialized information, that it is a valuable piece, right?
Maybe. Because there's definitely some very old furniture that I have looked at and said, there's no way anyone would pay anything for that because it's a hunk of ugly garbage. And then someone comes in and tells me, it's Shaker furniture and it's extremely rare and it's all I have in my house and I'm worth billions of dollars.
And then they end it with just like, they're just like, fuck you. And you're like, well, I don't know what that was all about, but okay.
Basically.
All right, yeah, you know what? That's fair.
That could just be anecdotal me-only problems. Like, I could be the only person who doesn't instantly see the value in big ticket items.
No, I think you're completely right. Like, I believe you have dissected this into a feel-good tactic that I've developed to make myself feel better about the fact that I don't have a lot to invest in finding items.
Now.
So much of it is logistical, too. Like, yeah, there are probably, like, lots of, like, great gets I could have if I had a big car and people to help me move it and storage space and somewhere to sell it.
Whereas, if you're going to yard sales and picking up the cups, the plates, the books, the knickknacks, you can basically just fill your actual human house with that and just live with your stock and not have it impact your life to an extent that furniture would.
Yeah. I mean, boy, are there definitely people who have found a way to make it impact their life against all odds. But yeah, I think that's a slower slide than if you're starting to do furniture, your house, that becomes a hoarder situation way faster than plates. Although, you know, ultimately that's your head and you need to go call a therapist. You have too many plates.
Oh no.
All right. So we know that smalls are, like, definitely beneficial to business because they change hands faster.
Yes.
Do you think that they are beneficial to humanity, or do you think that they should be snuffed off the face of this planet?
I think it depends greatly on the individual item.
Okay, I've got a little glass cauldron here.
Okay.
It's a little hobnail clear glass witch cauldron. What is the value to this?
Does it spark joy?
It does spark joy. Devin gave it to me after I bought a table that had a star inscribed on it that I painted up to look like a pentacle.
Aww.
So it would go with my witch aesthetic.
But does it spark joy?
Extremely, but I do feel guilty about it because it is doing nothing.
It's not doing nothing, it's sparking joy.
All right, well, so smalls are good.
If it brings joy to an individual and it is in that individual's possession, then yes.
Okay.
If it is burdensome to the individual, then it should be given to someone else.
Okay, I think that's a fair point. God, can we get Marie Kondo on the show?
I think that's a bigger get than we can manage.
Someday. Someday, Marie. Do books qualify as smalls?
Yes, I would say so. Although, I have noticed that they do not have the property of moving quickly through a shop. They do tend to sit in much the same way that furniture does.
Yeah, that was going to be my counter-argument, is that books do not have the same liquidity as other smalls.
Books might not be smalls.
I don't think books are smalls. But what about books keeps them from moving the same way smalls do?
Because it's not just about appearance, it's about content.
But boy, does that, like, go against everything I've experienced in the business, unfortunately. But that's a nice thought.
Well, for most people who love books, it takes longer to pick out a book because you're looking at the cover, you're looking inside, you're flipping through the pages, you're looking it up on your phone to see what the Goodreads ratings are, and then you're maybe thinking about it. Whereas if you see a teacup, you can look at the teacup and be like, does this make me happier or sadder? And then just use that as a determination as to whether or not you purchase the teacup.
Now I see what I've been doing wrong with books.
You've just been grabbing them.
I see them as the teacup. I go, yes, this makes me happy because it's a book. And I put it in a box and I take it home. And then I sit atop my huge stack of books hissing at people and going, they all have inherent value. Fuck you.
Listen, valid. That's a valid life choice you have made and I applaud it.
I'm screeching from my pile of books that knowledge is power.
Listen, you're not wrong. I also can't ever think of a book fort without thinking of that one beautiful photo from an unknown secondhand shop that had received enough copies of 50 Shades of Grey to build an actual fort out of.
That was really magical.
It was truly beautiful.
Yeah, because, see, that sticks in my craw, too, because when I think about, like, even in just secondhand shops, I think books move the slowest.
They really do.
Like, slower than furniture. Oh my god, what have I yoked myself to?
Enjoying books?
A fucking unmovable cart.
Do the books spark joy?
They do. They would spark more joy if I had less, though. I have actually managed to overindulge to the point where it has gotten to that point where I think the books spark joy in that I hope someday someone else will take them from me and love them.
Soon, the Etsy store will reopen.
It's so hard to find the time to get, like, out, because I need to cart them outdoors to get, like, proper photos. And then I do overtime and I come back at fucking 7 and the light's gone.
I'm sorry.
Someday, though. We're getting there. I've got them all cleaned. They're in boxes waiting to be photographed.
I can't wait.
They're ready. They're so close. Now all I have to do is research every single one and decide on a price point for it.
Yay!
God. I will say, I have stumbled into, speaking of smalls, this is very tangential, but I need to get it out somewhere. I have stumbled across the most absolutely bizarre and unpleasant series of antique books I've ever seen in my life.
Uh-huh.
And it's called, like, The Adventures of a Darling Little Couple.
Oh, no.
And it's these two children that are dressed up as Victorian adults, and they go on the things a grown-up person might do. Like, there's one where they go on a sea holiday, but they are children in elaborate costumes. And there's just nothing about it I like, Ken.
Why do you have it?
Because the illustrations are very pretty and it occurred to me that it's very much someone else's thing. And I am a goblin. I am an absolute goblin. I saw it and I said, pretty, and I had to have it. Also because they were so bonkers that I thought, there's no way there isn't a market for this. This is so unpleasant on every axis I can imagine that someone's going to want to have it.
Someone else will have the goblin instinct.
It's just like, that's what, like, I think the thing that sells the fastest on the Etsy is the thing, when I put clowns, if I find a clown related thing, I'm just like, I hate this. I sell it immediately. So I just, if I see something and I'm immediately repulsed by it, I just go for it. I'm just like, someone's gonna want this.
Well, here's the thing. The opposite of love isn't hate, it's indifference.
That's true. I had a strong reaction, which means someone's going to have an equally strong reaction.
Exactly.
And I have been 100% right on that every time.
So, final thoughts on smalls?
I think that they should be afforded more respect.
I agree.
I think that there is an inherent dignity in the accumulation of the flotsam of everyday life that would otherwise be sort of pushed aside in favor of big, splashy, more immediately historically important things.
Yes. Yes to all the above.
Basically, they're good, but we are going to be doing an episode on hoarding, so take that with a grain of salt.
Smalls good, actually.
Smalls good in moderation, like all things.
Aww. Sources for this episode include 14 years of experience in the antiques industry.
And 14 years of having opinions on stuff. And Ken's entire lifetime of being interested in history.
Being a huge goddamned nerd.
He's a big nerd, and we love him for it.
If you would like to tell us your thoughts on smalls, you can contact us directly, antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com. You can hit up our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends. You can tag us on Tumblr, antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com, or you can post in our subreddit, r/antiquesfreaks.
If you thought that it was cool that we talked today, and you said, that was cool, and I like to hear it, except this part's weird, you please scroll on down to wherever you're listening to this podcast, and leave us a review saying exactly that.
If you would like to listen to deleted scenes and help support the podcast, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks. Special shout out to our current patrons for paying our hosting fees and getting us ever closer to our goal of releasing bonus episodes.
You the real ones.
And thank you in particular for listening.
That's our you.
Goodbye.
Bye.